Morning. Today's Daf and Mab Mesia is Nun Zion. Thank the Lupin Foundation for the sponsorship of the Daf. Daf is Lenezech and Nishmas Libek Avela Bashmuel. We're in Nun Vav Amud Beis. We are about a quarter of the way down the Amud. We're talking about those things which are excluded from the Halachas of Ona'a. Making our way through the fourth parak of Mab Mesia, we've been talking mostly in the fourth parak about the Isser of Ona'a. One is not to overcharge for an item. Overcharging for an item means charging more than a sixth. Well, to be more specific and more accurate, actually, it means charging a sixth over its price. That is the threshold of ona'a. If you charge a sixth greater than what it is, so the Torah demands that you, the Torah says that that's a violation of ona'a, and the Gemara earlier concluded that the halacha said over by Rava is that if you charge a sixth, so the mekach is mekayim, the sale is a valid sale, but you have to refund the difference. Anything, anytime you charge over a sixth, so that was referred to as bitul mekach, that is the nullification of the sale. Those things which are excluded from ona'a, so the Mishnah gives us a list. And the list of things excluded from ona'a are avadim, shtaros, karkos, hekdeshos. So if you have slaves, documents, land, and hekdesh, so those are excluded from ona'a. Yesterday we went through the various drushes of the Gemara, in terms of how we know these things are excluded from ona'a. We find ourselves in Nunvavim and Beis, and and we are picking it up right where we left off yesterday. Maskefel Rabba. So it's about a third of the way down in the Amud. The first word in the line is Achiv, and the Gemara challenges Maskefel Rabba. Maramakol Echad Dixiv Yado Yado Mamashu. So let's see. So the reason why we know that ona'a only applies to movables, but not properties, because of the word yad. We quoted the pasuk yesterday, v'chiz simkru memkal amitecha okono miyad amitecha. And the Gemara's drasha yesterday was davar ha'nikna miyad liyad. It has to be something that's handed over from one person to another. So, that means then that it's the Torah's meant in this context to be taken quite literally. That in order for something to be subject to the rules of ona'a, it has to be something that's handed over. Property obviously cannot be handed over, so therefore it's excluded from ona'a. But the Gemara says, but is that always true? Every time you see the word yad in the Torah, and it refers specifically to movables. So the Gemara talks about the Psukim towards the end of Sefer Bamidbar, where we have Sichon taking the land from Moab, and it says Miyado from his hand. Now we're talking about property. Obviously the property over there is not meant that he actually took it from his hand. It means he took it from his possession. You see the word Yad in this context clearly means simply possession. Doesn't mean something that's immovable. So Hachinami dechol arav yadehu nakilei. So Ella Mirushuso. So the Gemara makes exactly that point. It doesn't mean from his hand. It means from his possession. Hachinami Mirushuso. So the Gemara says, so it must be from the Rishus. Okay, so we have on our hands right now a very strong question, which is that the word Yad in the Torah clearly is not meant to be taken super literally, and Yad could just simply mean that you're in possession of. So the Gemara says, okay, the question's a good question, but let's go over another number of times throughout the Torah where you see the word Yad, and its clear intent is literally hand. The Gemara says, the Gemara says, well, you see, I'm going to show you a number of times where Yad is meant to be taken literally. I'll give you, the Gemara is going to give us two examples. The Pasuk in Mishpatim tells us that if you find a ganav with the item in his hand, in other words, he was caught, as the term, as the expression here goes, literally red-handed. So he was caught with the item in his hand. So then, under those circumstances, the ganav has to pay kefal. And the Gemara teaches us, ein li ela yado. So if I only had the pasuk, then I would have known that the halach of kefal is only when he's caught with the item physically and literally in his hand. How do I know that if it's found on his possession, he's also going to be chayv kefal tamalami matzei timatzei? The double lashon of himatzei timatzei comes to include other means of possession. But clearly, without the drasha, what would have happened? So without the drasha, it would have been clear that the word yado is to be taken literally, and it means just the hand. The Gemara says, Vesutanya, and the Gemara says, I'll give you another example. We see Yado is meant to be taken literally. And that is, V'nasam b'yado, the halach of gittin. The Torah says that when you hand a get, when the husband's handing a get to his wife for a divorce, so he has to put it in her hand. So I only know from the Torah that the husband has to put it in her hand. How about if he puts in other courtyards that belong to her? As long as they belong to her, that's also going to be considered putting it in her hand. Tamalama Vinasan, Mikamakom. So Vinasan is coming to tell me that these areas are included as well. And again, without the drasha, what would we have said? Tam Dikasavrachman Vinasan Halav Haki Havaminikol Hekhadiksiv Yado, Yadomamish. So without the drasha, Yado would have meant just her hand. So there are two times now in Chumash where you see the word Yado is meant to be literal, and that's just the hand. So Elakol Yado Yadomamishu. So the Gemara says, really, so that's the rule. The rule is that when you see the word Yado in the Torah, it's mamish, meaning it means just the hand. So Vishani Hastam Delek Lamim Rachi Ela Berushu. So, and as far as the pasuk regarding Sichon taking the land from Moab, so the Gemara says, okay, there, that's going to buck the trend, meaning that's an exception to the rule. With every rule, there's an exception, and that's just simply an exception to the rule. There's no other way to translate that pasuk. Pasuk over there is talking about property, and it uses the word Yad. Clearly, Yad over there means possession, but that's the exception. The rule is that Yad means just the hand. By Rav Zeres, Chiris Yesh Lo Ona O Ein Lo Ona. So, next question the Gemara deals with, and that's the following. What about a rental? If I rent an item, are we subject to the rules of Ona or not? Now, on one hand, you would say, well, of course not, meaning, and the Gemara immediately challenges this idea that there should be such a thing as Ona when it comes to rental. Mimka merchmana aval schiros. On one hand, the Torah says sale, meaning only by a final sale is there going to be a prohibition of Ona. But if we're not talking about a sale, we're just talking about a rental, so then it shouldn't be subject to Ona. Odim aloshna, or the Gemara says, or maybe it shouldn't make a difference. Meaning it is a monetary transaction, and there is a fair market value price to it. So maybe even a rental should be subject to Ona. So Amalei Abaye Miksiv Memkar La'Olam Memkar Stam Miksiv. So Abaye says the answer is pretty clear. Because the Torah talks about a sale. But the Torah doesn't say Memkar La'Olam. The Torah doesn't say it has to be a final sale. The Torah just simply says it has to be a sale. V'hai Nami B'yomei Mechirihi. Now, when it comes to a rental, you know, a rental's a sale. It's temporary. I'm selling it to you for a day. I know we use the term rental, but when all said and done, it really is a sale. So the Gemara says that, Abaye says, I don't see this as being a question. The rental is also subject to the rules of Ona. By Rav Echitim Vizarim Bekarkamahu, Yeshu Ma'ona, Ein La Ma'ona. So next question of the Gemara. Let's say it is wheat, and the wheat kernel was placed in the ground. So is it subject to Ona or is it not subject to Ona? Now this is an interesting question because let's remember, Ona applies to movables, but Ona does not apply to karka. Okay, that's what we learned in the Mishnah. We saw the drush in the beginning of the in the top of the Amud. Ona does not apply to karka. We know that, let's say, a tree planted in the ground. Tree planted in the ground is karka. Okay, in other words, that tree has the halachic status of karka. Here we're talking about kernels of wheat that were put into the ground. For what purpose, we'll get to a little bit in just a moment. But in other words, is the idea now that wheat kernel still considered a movable entity, or is the wheat kernels now considered part and parcel? Here I'm using the expression literally. Does it become now part and parcel of the ground? So the Gemara says, "Kaman d'shaja b'kad d'adami v'yesh l'mona," and the Gemara here articulates the question. Do we basically look at the ground as just simply a container holding the wheat kernels, but that's all it is? But in other words, the wheat kernels still have the status of movable items, therefore subject to Ona. Odima batlino al gavara. So the Gemara says, or maybe no. Maybe the wheat kernels are considered negated relative to the property, meaning basically the wheat kernels now assume the status of the property. And just like there's no Ona by the property, so too there's no Ona by the wheat kernels as well. So the Gemara says, okay, in concept, in theory, I understand the question. But the Gemara says, but practically speaking, what exactly is the case that we're talking about? Echidami. Ilam damer idusha dabai shisava asusaha devarmi le delosha dabai elachamisha. So the Gemara says, now let's try to understand where the question becomes relevant. Let's say the transaction went like as follows, where the seller purported that he was going to sell 6 bushels of wheat kernels. And witnesses come along, and where are they right now? I put them in the ground. for safekeeping. And witnesses come along, and the witnesses said, you know, he didn't put six into the ground, he only put 5 bushels of wheat into the ground. So the Gemara says, under those circumstances, and that's obviously a six off, meaning a six of six is one, so it's a six off.
But that's not a price issue, that's a...
So the Gemara says, exactly correct, V'hama Rava, kol davar shebemida v'shebemishkol shebeminyan afilo pachas mechdeo na'a chozer. So as Ben articulates, as the Gemara points out, this is not an issue of ona'a. Ona'a is when we know what's being sold, it's just a question of what the fair price is. This is not a question of ona'a. Here we're talking about the absolute quantity of the item. If you're telling me, and we're talking about an item which is quantifiable, if you're telling me that you're selling me six, and I say, and I agree to buy six, and it's not six there, whatever the amount is, it's not six, that is not, the rules of ona'a don't apply. Simply put, you didn't sell what you said you were going to sell. This is immediately mekach tos. Immediately it's a voided sale. So the Gemara says, so even as I conceptually understand the question of when the wheat is in the ground, is the wheat bottled to the ground or not, but still practically speaking, what are we even talking about? So the transaction went like this. I'm selling you amount of wheat that would fill the property. So over here, we're not talking about necessarily a quantifiable amount. It's just that this is my estimation of how much wheat can go into this property. So now comes out is that he shortchanged him, but not the kind of shortchanging where it was a quantifiable difference. It was a difference of opinion in terms of how much wheat can go into this property. So now, yesh lamona in lamona. So command shadi bekadi damin veish lamona o dilma batlino agav ara. So the Gemara just simply reformulates the same question, but now at least in this formulation, the question now is relative to the fact of I put in what I think was enough wheat to fill the ground. What turns out is that it wasn't the case. So now we're talking about this kind of discrepancy. And so now the question becomes, are the wheat kernels considered movables, just simply being held in the ground, or no? Once the wheat kernel is put into the ground, they become nullified to the ground, and just like there's no onah, and there's no onah by ground, so too there's no onah by these particular wheat kernels.
But it's still not a price issue, though. It's not a, you know, even if it's unquantified number of seeds.
It's not.
Price issue, right. It's fraud, but it's a different kind of fraud. It's not like a. It's still mekachtel. It's more like mekachtel than.
Right. The Rashi's terminology over here is umdana. It still requires. We're eyeballing. We're like giving some sort of ballpark figure of how much. But how much over here? You're right. I totally agree with you. It's not how much it is, but how much should be going into the ground. But it's not a quantifiable measure. Once it's no longer a quantifiable measure, so then it subscribes to the rules of ona. That isn't. You're right, though. But it is a leap from where we're talking normally about price. Nishbain aleinu nishbain aleihem. And the Gemara now is just going to be asking the same question again, just using a different application of law, and that is shvua. Like we learned back in the Mishnah, you don't make a shvua on a dispute on karka. You only make a shvua on a dispute of movables. So now, it's the same question. It's just a different halacha. So the Gemara says, okay, same exact question. So if they are considered just being held in the ground, you would make a shvua over a dispute of this wheat. If it's considered subservient to the ground, right, negated by the ground, bottled to the ground, so then you would not make a shvua. Next question. Omer matiran o ein omer matiran. Okay, here's what we know. In America, not that many people know this, but it's a halacha. We talked about it in Kiddushin extensively. And that is that we know that when you plant wheat in the ground and or any grain in the ground and it grows from the ground, so you're not allowed to eat it when you harvest it. Well, it's at that point in time considered chadash, it's new. When are you allowed to eat the grains? Only after the second day of Pesach comes and goes. Right? When there was a Beis HaMikdash, the second day of Pesach was designated for the Karban Omer. And when you offer the Karban Omer, so then all that wheat becomes permissible. When the Beis HaMikdash is no longer extant, so then you have just simply the passing of the day. Right? There's a discussion in the Gemara regarding the day itself. At what point during the day it becomes mutter? But Right, one of the takanas of Yochanan ben Zakkai. But anyway, but you have to wait until the second day of the Omer. Once the second day of the Omer comes and goes, then all that wheat which was harvested is going to become mutter. The truth of the matter is, it's not even this halacha of the Omer being mutter the wheat is not just for wheat which is harvested. As long as the wheat has grown even prior to it being harvested, it's still going to become mutter with the bringing of the carbon. It's only wheat which was not yet planted, or wheat which was planted but hasn't yet taken root. Then and only then are we going to have to wait till next year's Omer in order for that to become mutter. So now the Gemara's question goes like this. I took wheat kernels, which could either be edible or could be used as seeds. I put them into the ground. Now they're underground while the second day of Pesach comes and goes. Are they going to become mutter through the passing of the second day of Pesach? Hechidami. The Gemara says this needs more clarification. Ida ishrish tanina, ida lo ishrish tanina. Did it take root or did it not take root? Did not. The Gemara is quoting the Mishnah here. I'm sorry. The Gemara here is quoting the Mishnah Menachos. The Mishnah says, "Im ishrishu kodem laomer, omer matiran, v'im lav asur nachiyava omer haba." And the Mishnah gives us a very clear threshold. If the wheat kernel, if the seed took root and it passes the Omer, Omer is matir. If it did not take root, Omer is not matir. So the Gemara says, Lo tzrichu dechatzdina v'zarinu kardum la'omer. So the Gemara says, here's what happened. You took wheat kernels which were chadash, they were new, and you needed the Omer to pass over them. And you put them into the ground, and you put them into the ground as seeds in the ground. V'zarinu kodem la'omer. V'asa le'omer. V'chalefi lavayu. And the Omer came and went, meaning the second day of Pesach came and went. And v'lo ishrush kodem la'omer. And it didn't take root. So ma'u l'minkat. So the Gemara says, so now, can I take my hand, put it into the ground, pick up the seed, and eat the seed? And again, the formulation of the question, we're now on the top of Menzayin Amud Aleph, it's the same question, but now just with a third application, and that is, Kaman Deshajim Bekad Adami V'Sharino Omer, are we just simply saying that the seed is now just being held in a container? And we know, meaning, had the seed been put in a Tupperware, and Omer would have came and went, of course the Omer would have been matir, because it was harvested before the second day of Pesach. So if the ground is just simply viewed as a Tupperware, so then it'd be fine. Odilma, batlinu, agav ara. Or maybe no. In other words, if I put in a Tupperware, so then the Omer would of course been matir. But over here we're talking about where I put him in the ground. And once I put him in the ground, they now become batel to the ground, and therefore the Omer is not going to be matir. It's the same question, just with a third application. Teku, the Gemara leaves these questions unresolved, meaning when I put seed in the ground, do I view the ground as just simply a container, or does the seed now become part and parcel of the ground, and all the halachas of being underground would apply?
This is a status issue. How come they don't...
There could be other applications as well of the same question. So the Gemara treated ourselves to this question regarding the halachas of Ona'a, to the halachas of Omer, Ona'a, Shvua, and Omer. So those are the three halachas that the Gemara relates to this question of putting the seed into the ground. Okay, we are now on the top of Nanzayin Amud Aleph. The Gemara asks the following question. Amar Rava, Amar Rav Chasa, by Rabbi Ami. So the Gemara is quoting now a question asked by Rabbi Ami, and that goes as follows. Ona'a ein lahem bitomekach. Ona'a ein lahem bitomekach yesh lahem. O ein lahem. Is there these items that we discussed in our Mishnah. And let's right now just focus on Karka, even though we're going to extend the discussion to Hekdesh in just a moment. Okay. But let's say that as it relates to Karka, we know that Karka is not subject to Ona. So that means that if all we knew was the Mishnah, here's what we know. We know that if, let's say, the price of the land is $600,000. Okay, just throwing out numbers. So now we know that a 6 over, a 6 under would be 100,000. So let's say I charge $700,000 for that land. Okay, so we know that karka is excluded from onah. So now we know that the sale would be a valid sale. That's so far what we know. The Gemara's question now is, okay, I know that that karka is not subject to the rules of onah, but how about the rules of bittul mekach? What's the difference? Rashi over here says, difference is as follows. Onah, as we've been saying since the beginning of the Gemara's discussion, now about a week and a half ago, since we started it, onah means a six, meaning literally and accurately a six. Like the example that I just gave, where its value was 600,000, I charged 700,000, so that is exactly precisely onah. What about above that point in time? So above that point, that's no longer called onah. That's what's called, well, with the term that we used it, that we used for it earlier in the perek, is that it's yoser me onah. It's more than onah. Now the halach is when it comes to movables, we say immediately that negates the sale. That's bittul mekach. The Gemara wants to know, even though land has been excluded from onah, so that means at a six. But what about when you go above a six? What the Gemara now is entertaining is that there comes, there, maybe, this is a question, maybe there comes a point in time where the discrepancy of price over what its fair market value is so excessive that even by land, negated. The sale is just simply negated. So if instead of charging $700,000 for that $600,000 land, if I charge anything above $700,000, so maybe the sale should just simply be negated. And that's how Rashi explains the Gemara's question. Rashi, yesh lehen o ein lehen. I'm reading the Rashi. Mi amrinan me al tonuhu di imait. Meaning, yes, it's true, karka has been removed from the category of lo sonu. However, or al tonu. V'hala b'chlal anahu. And yes, it's true. It's not in the category of anah. Elamekach sosu. O dilma kevan delav dvar shebemidahu. V'lavitai b'diburei kishar din anahu. Or maybe no. Maybe when it comes to price, there is really no two categories. Meaning it's, you are, I think that it's subject to this price, and the other person's willing to pay whatever price he's willing to pay. And maybe when we say that karka is excluded from ana'a, what we're simply saying is, as long as we are clear in terms of what the dimensions of the land are, in terms of the price, whatever the person wants to pay is considered a fair transaction.
How come the Gemara doesn't use this week's parsha as an example?
Right. Very good. That's very good. In other words, he. Well, we don't know how much its fair value is, but that's
like
a great. Right.
Was exaggerated.
Correct.
Paid.
Correct. And that's okay. Well, okay. So we'll see. We'll see how the Gemara deals with this question. So the bittul mekach eishlam o ein lahem. Amar Rav Nachman ha da Amar Rav Chasa Pashi Rabbi Ami ona ein lahem bittul mekach eishlam. So the Gemara says that the traditions go as follows. According to Rabbi Ami, there is no onah when it comes to karka, but there is bittul mekach. So that means that according to Rabbi Ami, so when we're dealing with land, so if you're charging a six over its value, okay, so it's not included in the halachas of onah like the Mishnah told us. But if you charge over a six, so then there would be bittul mekach. Rabbi Yona Amar Ahek Deshos, and Rabbi Yona says that idea that it's not subject to onah, but it is subject to bittul mekach, it's going on hekdesh. Rav Yirmiya Amar Akarka, I'm sorry. What just happened? I'm sorry. Let me do that again. Rabbi Ami says that there's no onah, but there's bittul mekach. Okay. Rabbi Yona, Rabbi Yirmiya, let me present this again. Let me do it correctly. Okay, I'm following Rashi. Rabbi Yona and Rabbi Yirmiya now are not making a statement based on what Rabbi Ami just told us. They're making an independent statement. Obviously, it's the same topic, but they are doing so independently. And as we'll see in just a moment, they're both saying it in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Okay, so I'm reading again from Rabbi Yona. Rabbi Yona Amar Ekdeshos, Rabbi Yirmiya Amar Karkos. Rabbi Yona says it's going on Hekdesh, Rabbi Yirmiya says it's going on Karka, V'tarva Mishmei de Rabbi Yochanan Amru, and they both are saying it in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, Ona Ein Lehem, Bittul Mekach Yesh Lehem, and that there's no Ona, but there's Bittul Mekach. So, okay, to clarify. In other words, again, it's the same basic idea. When we're saying that there's no onah by karka, that means, or by hektesh, it means that if I'm charging a six over or under, it's not subject to the rules of onah. However, Anything above that is going to result in bittul mekach, meaning it's too wide a discrepancy between its market value and how much you charge for it. So the Gemara is saying now, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, this point that we just made is either going to be related to karka or it's going to be related to hekdesh. Now the Gemara goes on and clarifies this next point. Manda amar hekdeshes kol shekein karkos. Now, if there's bittul mekach by hekdesh, there's for sure going to be bittul mekach by karka, and Rashi explains like this. Let's consider. By hekdesh, so who are you transacting with? Now, of course, there's a gizbar, and he's the accountant. But ultimately, when all said and done, the money is being transacted between you and the Beis HaMikdash, or you and the Ribbono Shel Olam. But really, the truth of the matter is, it's not a transaction between two parties. It's not. It's you and this, I described it yesterday as a corporate entity, just so that we can, you know, wrap our heads around the idea. But you're not really conducting business with another person. If you're saying that there's bittul mekach between you and hekdesh, you're for sure saying, this is Gemara's point, you're for sure saying that there's bittul mekach between on karka between you and another person. Because let's consider, and again, I'm just saying it over like Rashi. Let's consider. If by hekdesh where I'm not really negotiating with anybody, and there, if I over or undercharge more than a six, we're saying the sale is off. So that means that when I'm negotiating with another person, for sure the sale is going to be off. Because there's such a great discrepancy between me and him on what the on what its value is versus how much I charged, then for sure that is considered exploitation, and for sure it's going to be negated. However, but the Gemara says, but if you say that there's no bittul mekach when it comes to, sorry, if you say that there is bittul mekach as it relates to karka, but that may be exclusive in the world of karka, but that may not be true by hekdesh. In other words, and again, the difference is exactly as we just laid out. Because by karka, it's a transaction between two people, and so therefore, there clearly was a major misrepresentation of the price. I'm charging this, you pay that, you paid above a sixth of what its value is, so bittul mekach, that's too much. However, when it comes to hekdesh, maybe not. Maybe by hekdesh, again, there's no real transaction between two parties. It's you and the Beis HaMikdash. And the Gemara says, under those circumstances, it's not subject to not onah and not bittul mekach. And the Gemara says, kiddush Shmuel. And this would fall in line with the opinion of Shmuel. The opinion of Shmuel, which is cited time and again throughout Shas, right, you can see on the side of the Gemara, kiddushin, becharos, me'ila, tamura, erchin. So this statement to Shmuel comes up again and again. Da'amr Shmuel, hekdesh shava manah, shechilo shava pruta, michulal. Shmuel says that if I have hekdesh and it's worth 100, and I deconsecrate it onto a pruta, now that is a that is a major discrepancy between its value and how much I deconsecrated for. Michulal, if the deconsecration still works, obviously it's not an equivalency in terms of what its value was and versus how much I transferred its kedusha till, but still michulal, it's still going to work. So if you subscribe to Shmuel, so that means hekdesh is totally removed from ona'a, from bittul mekach, meaning it's just simply not part and parcel. Okay, let me quickly summarize. Basically, where we stand right now is the following. We are now entertaining the following question. The Gemara started this question with Rabbi Ami, and that is that when it comes to karka, we know it's excluded from onah. That's clear. And if I charge a six over or under, the sale is going to be still a valid sale. And there's no refund necessary. However, if I charge over a six, so maybe now that the discrepancy is so wide between the market value and how much I charge, so maybe that should result in bittul mekach. And so Rabbi Ami entertained the question. He sides with the idea that there is bittul mekach when it comes to karka. And then Amarayim quote Rav Yochanan to two different opinions. One is that there's bittul mekach with karka, and the other is that there's bittul mekach with hekdesh. If you say there's bittul mekach with hekdesh, for sure there's going to be bittul mekach by karka. If you say that it's bittul mekach by karka, that's not necessarily true by hekdesh, and that would fall in line with the statement of Shmuel, which is that when it comes to hekdesh, there doesn't have to be any kind of equivalency between the item of kedusha and that which I transferred onto. Okay, Tanan Hasam. We're learning now a Mishnah. Mishnah in Temura goes as follows: Ima yakodesh ba'mom yatzal lechulin v'tzarach la'asos lo damim. Okay. As we've discussed already just a couple days ago, when I have a carbon, I can't not transfer the Kedusha onto another carbon. The Torah says don't do it. Now, if you do it, who's muscle you? Yeah, Kodesh. So the original animal and the animal you attempt to exchange are both going to have Kedusha. Okay, well and good. If the animal, however, that I'm transferring the Kedusha from is a Bamum, which means it's a blemished animal, which means that it's no longer fit to be brought into the Mizbeach, so now I can transfer its Kedusha to another animal. So, imaya kodesh bamum yatzal lechulin. So, if the animal that was designated as a carbon now is a blemished animal, no longer fit to be going onto the mizbech, and I want to transfer its kedusha to another animal, it works. V'sarach l'asos lo damim. If there is any type of discrepancy, and I need to make up the difference, I need to make up the difference. And the Gemara explains. Amar Rav Yochanan yetzal lechulin dvar Torah. Now Rav Yochanan says, as far as the deconsecration of the animal because it's a bamum, that's effective min haTorah. Tzarech lasos lo damim midivrehim. But Rav Yochanan says as follows. The fact that if there's a discrepancy, you have to make up the difference, that's a din derabbanan. Meaning it's rabbinic legislation that the rabbis did not want you to shortchange the Beis HaMikdash. But the Torah doesn't demand that you need to do it. Reish Lakish Amar Avtar Chlas Oslo Damim Min HaTorah, and Reish Lakish says, no. The idea that you have to make up the difference, if there's a balance, you have to make up the difference, that's a din Torah. That's not a din derabbanan. Now, b'may askin, and the Gemara says now, what kind of discrepancy are we talking about? Ilema bichteona, ba'alema reishlok shetarach lasos l'damit v'artara v'atanan. Eil dvarm she'ilem ona, karkos v'avodos v'asharos v'akteshos. So the Gemara says, if the discrepancy is 1/6, exactly 1/6, so the Gemara says there can be no opinion, there is no legitimate opinion that says that the discrepancy has to be reimbursed min haTorah. Because we just learned together in our Mishnah, yesterday's daf, that hektesh is not subject to ona. So if the discrepancy is 1/6, then min haTorah, you do not have to make up the difference. It can't be. So ela bitul mekach. It must be that the discrepancy between the animal and that the animal that I transferred the kedusha on has to be greater than 1/6. So the Gemara says, so now that we know the discrepancy is greater than 1/6, so now let's wrap our heads around what we're saying. We are saying that the animal is a blemished animal, and I'm taking the kedusha of the animal transferring it to another animal. The second animal is significantly less in value. And when I say significant, I mean greater than 1/6. Let's say it's 20% less in value. Okay, 1/6 is 16%. 16 2/3. Okay, so let's say the difference is 20% in value. Okay, so now the Mishnah tomorrow says that you have to make up the difference. Rav Yochanan says that's only a din derabbanan. Reish Lakish says that's a din d'oraisa. So the Gemara says, now lema Rav Yochanan tzarech lasos lo damim midivrayim. Now, Rav Yochanan is saying, as quoted just a moment ago, that you do have to make up the difference, but that's only a din derabbanan. The Gemara says, but wait 1 second. V'hamar Rav Yonah aik deshos, Rav Yirmiya amar akarkos, v'tervar mishmei derav Yochanan, amre ona ein lahem, bito mekach yesh lahem. The Gemara says, but we just quoted in the name of Rabbi Yonah that who's saying it in the name of Rabbi Yochanan that once the discrepancy is greater than 1/6, so then there's going to be bitul mekach even as it relates to hektesh. So now, basically, I'm trying to put two statements of Rabbi Yochanan together, and it does not conform. Because Rav Yochanan said in that Mishnah Temura that if the difference is greater than Ona'a, let's say 20%, 30%, whatever, it's greater than Ona'a, so then Rav Yochanan is quoted as saying that I have to make up the difference, but only rabbinically. And meanwhile, at least according to Rabbi Yonah, in his presentation of Rav Yochanan, once you're above 1/6, so even by Hakdesh, it's Bitul Mekach. It's not a valid transaction. So the Gemara says, so I'm trying to put these two statements side by side, and it doesn't work. So la'olam bebetul mekach ve'epuch. So the Gemara says, ve'epuch de Rav Yochanan l'Reish Lakish, u de Reish Lakish l'Rav Yochanan. So the Gemara says, okay, so in order to make Rav Yochanan work out, we're going to flip Reish Lakish Rav Yochanan in that Mishnah Temura. So that means that according to Rav Yochanan, the need to make up the difference is mida araisa. And now the Rav Yochanan in the Mishnah Temura fits in with Rav Yonah's presentation of Rav Yochanan. And the Gemara says, and again, all this revolves around the opinion of Shmuel. Damar Shmuel hekdesh shaveh manah shechilah shaveh pruta mechulal, mar isle de Shmuel, mar lesle de Shmuel. And the Gemara says, and now, how the machlokas works like this. According to Rav Yochanan, Rav Yochanan doesn't subscribe to Shmuel's rule. So that means that according to Rav Yochanan, there must be an equivalency, or at least some fair representation of its value. When I say fair representation, what do I mean? Up to and including a six. Beyond that point in time, it no longer is fair representation, and therefore you have to make up the difference. That sheet is Rav Yochanan, and that's why you have to make up the balance min haTorah, and that's Rabbi Yonah's position within Rav Yochanan, that once it's over a six, so then you have to make up the difference. Masha Enkein, Reish Lakish will tell you that no, that even if by Hektish it isn't fair representation of its value, the Chilul still works. You have to make up the difference, says the Mishnah in Temurah, that's a Din D'Rabbanan. The Gemara says, Ibai Sema Dekulei Amasli D'Shmuel, the Gemara gives a second approach, and that is that both opinions subscribe to the rule of Shmuel, which is that when you're Mechal, when you deconsecrate, it doesn't have to be fair representative value. And the question is that we all subscribe to Shmuel, but that's only post facto. Lichatchila, knowing in advance that there doesn't have to be fair representation, can I a priori go ahead and deconsecrate even though it doesn't represent fair value? That's the debate between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. The Gemara says, or maybe we can suggest as follows. We're going to go against one of the most basic positions that we took from the very beginning. And that is that by Hekdesh, maybe if it is only a six in difference, maybe still you have to make up the difference. Velo tepuch. And the Gemara says, and the truth of the matter is that keep Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish the way it was originally presented. Where? I took an animal that was a blemish animal, and I deconsecrated the animal, and I went on to another animal, and the discrepancy wasn't even that wide. The discrepancy was only a six. And still now, let's go over now the way the positions were originally presented to us, that according to Rav Yochanan, I have to make up the difference, but only midrabbanan. According to Reish Lakish, I have to make up the difference min haTorah. And the Gemara says, and maybe it goes like this. Uchidarav chista kamiflagi. Da'amar my ain lahem ona'a, ainan bitoras ona'a. If we were to go like Rav Chista, we would understand that when we're saying that Hekdesh is removed from Ona'a, maybe what that means is it's removed from any kind of price fluctuation. Meaning that when you're doing transactions, there's room for a little bit of price fluctuation. That's basically what we've been saying since the beginning. Meaning if I sell you an item and I charge, let's say, 2, 5, 10% more than its value, okay, in other words, there's room for price fluctuation. It's only when you get to 16 and two-thirds over its value, then that's ona. Above that, it's beyond ona, it's mekach tos. Maybe Rav Chista says, well, not maybe, but Rav Chista's of the opinion that when it comes to Hekdesh, there is no room for price fluctuation. Which basically, by the way, if you think about it, which I've been doing obviously, Rav Chista is like on the polar opposite of Shmuel. Shmuel says that when you're mechalal, when you deconsecrate Hekdesh, there doesn't have to be any representative fair value of what it was versus what you deconsecrated onto. According to Rav Chista, there can be no room for any kind of error in terms of how much it's valued at. And when and his understanding of it's ainah ba'onah, it's ainah b'toras onah, meaning you're not given that normal comfort zone of a six. The afilu, top of Menzainim and Beis, pachus michtei ona'a chozer, that when it comes to Hekdesh, even if it's less than ona'a, it's still going to retract. Okay. So where do we stand right now? So we have Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish within the Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish within the Mishnah and Temurah, though we have now three ways to represent the machlokas between Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish. When I deconsecrate an animal and transfer its kedusha to another animal, and it's not fair value, it's not representative value, so I have to make up the difference. The Mishnah and Temurah says that very clearly. Is that operate on a derisa level? Is that operate on a derabban level? And really, what's at the kernel of this discussion is when the rules of ona'a. You basically are going to have three options. I'm just summarizing. A, the rules of ona'a don't apply to Hekdesh at all, meaning not when you hit ona'a, not even when you're over ona'a, which is the opinion of Shmuel. Or it could be that the rules of ona'a are similar to hekdesh as they are to regular transactions, and the idea that you have to make up the difference is only din derabbanan, is on a rabbinic level, or according to Rav Chisda, where saying that hekdesh is not subject to the laws of onah, he actually goes in the totally opposite direction, which means it doesn't. There's no room for error whatsoever. Meitzvei. The Gemara now in the top of Nun Zayin Amud Aleph challenges based on the following: Ribbis v'onah lehejot, vein ribbis v'onah lehekdesh. There is laws of interest and laws of exploitation when it comes to transactions done between people. However, there's no prohibition of interest and onaa as it relates to hekdesh. So that is a brisa. The simplest pshat of the brisa is that when the hekdesh does business transactions, they are not bound by ona'a, and they're not bound by ribbis, which we're going to explain better in just a moment. However, what is troubling is that, according to Rav Chisda, what do you mean? Rav Chisda will tell you that when it comes to hekdesh and ona'a, not only do the rules of ona'a apply, it's well beyond the rules of ona'a. There can be no price fluctuation between its value and how much you paid for it. So the Gemara says, "Mi alima mamasisin dokimna b'taras onah achnami ribbis v'din onah lehejoven ribbis v'din onah lehekdesh." So the Gemara says again, the Brice says no worse or better than the Mishnah. The Mishnah used the word ona'a. What we're saying is that according to Rav Chisda, ona'a means the laws of ona'a, meaning that there can be no price fluctuation whatsoever. So the Gemara says, okay, but then the Braisa goes on to say, this is a Chumrah as it relates to people versus the Beis HaMikdash. According to Rav Chisda, it's just the opposite. It's a Chumrah by the Beis HaMikdash, meaning that when setting price for the Beis HaMikdash, there can be no price fluctuation. That's a Chumrah by the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara says, Aribis. The Gemara says, no. That last statement of the Braisa was just focusing on interest. There's interest when people lend to one another, but there's no interest by the Beis HaMikdash. Again, we're going to explain what that means in just a moment. So listening now, is chomer behekdesh mebehejot. So aonah, the Gemara says, okay, but why didn't the Braisa at the end say that this is a chomer by the Beis HaMikdash, focusing on the laws of onah? So the Gemara says, hachi hashta. The Gemara says, no, come on. Bishlam is chomer behejot mebehekdesh vesulo. Ela hekdesh chomer vesulo. So the Gemara says, look, if you want to tell me that there's a chomer by people that you don't have by the Beis HaMikdash, that's a novelty. Meaning, right, because generally speaking, hekdesh is always going to be more chumrah than when it comes to hejot. So you want to tell me that there's a chumrah by hejot that you don't have by the Beis HaMikdash? Gemara says that's a novelty. But if you just tell me that there's a chumrah by the Beis HaMikdash that you don't have by hejot, there's no novelty to that. Okay, fine. Ribbis to hekdesh echidami. Now we're saying that the laws of interest don't apply to the Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara says, what are we even talking about? So the Gemara says, so let's say the temple treasurer takes some money from the Beis HaMikdash, and right, somebody approaches him and says, can you give me some money? Can you lend me some money? Temple treasurer says, sure, no problem at all. he takes the Beis HaMikdash money and he lends that money out. So, and let's say he lends it where? He lends it for 100 with the understanding that he's going to get back 120. Interest. So the Gemara says, Va'alo ma'al ha-gizbar. The Gemara says, wait 1 second. The treasurer had absolutely no right to take that money and use that to lend out to people. The fact that he did that, what does that mean? What did he do? He violated the Isser of Me'ilah. And as we say time and again, what's the result of violating the Isser of Me'ilah? The money is Yotzei L'chulin. The money immediately becomes deconsecrated. The Kevin Shemal HaGizbar Yatsu Ma'asav L'chulin. So that means that money becomes deconsecrated. V'ahava L'hu Dehejot. And so that means basically that this money is the Gizbar's money, lending it out. So of course it's going to be subject to the laws of interest. So the Gemara says, "Amar Ravoshi, Achma Ma'iskin Kagon Shekiba Alav Lisbok Slasos Me'arba Va'amdu Mishalosh." So the Gemara says, well, "Okay, so what we're describing over here is the following: when we say that there's no ribbis as it relates to hekdesh, it's talking specifically about a case of contracting supplies to the Beis HaMikdash." Okay, generally speaking, here's what we know. And we're going to be discussing this more in the fifth parak. That when you contract with somebody, you have to wait till the market announces how much its value it's at. Otherwise, you can't contract with people and you can't hand money to people. Because when you hand somebody money to a person for a contracted sale and the market hasn't gone out yet what it's worth, and we're only guessing what it's worth, it may lead to look like interest. We'll discuss this in more detail. When it comes to the Beis HaMikdash, there is no concern for this whatsoever. There's no regard for that whatsoever. And basically, it's because the Beis HaMikdash will gain in either event. Kidetanya. And the Gemara quotes the Braisa, Ha Mikaba love this book, Salas Marba Vamdu Mishalosh. Let's say that your seller could buy four sa'as of wheat, and you contract to supply to the Beis HaMikdash, where they're going to give you a sa'ah, and now you're going to be supplying four sa'as of wheat, v'amdu mishalosh, and the price skyrocketed, where your seller can only buy three sa'ah of wheat. So, mispek ba'arba. So, you, because you contracted to sell him, for the, him meaning the Beis HaMikdash, for sa'ah, you must supply four sa'ah, despite the fact that the price now is significantly more. You're going to have to go dip into your pocket in order to make up the difference. Mishal Shvamdu Me'arba, let's say that when you contracted with the Beis HaMikdash to supply them, and at the time of the contract, the price of wheat was three sa'ah for a sa'ah, and then the price dropped, and you could buy now four sa'ah for a sa'ah, so Mispek Me'arba. So you still are going to have to be supplying based on the four sa'a per sella price. So shiyan hekdash al yona, as a general rule, that's what it is. We know that when doing business with the Beis HaMikdash, they're always going to have the upper hand. Rapapa amar hachaba avne binyan amasur segizbar skinan. Another example where the laws of ribbis don't apply to the Beis HaMikdash. We know that when they build in the Beis HaMikdash, so first you build with non-consecrated product, and then after the building is done, you then imbue it with Kedusha. So now, Kedushmol, Damashmol, Bonim, V'chol, V'achakach, Makdishin. So now, in the event that the Beis HaMikdash, let's say, lends out the stone, meaning for its value, with the understanding that you're going to pay back more later on, so it's not Mi'ila, because right now the stone is not imbued with Kedusha. Basically, it's an item that belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, does not have Kedusha. So therefore, we're saying that the laws of ribbis don't apply in such a scenario. So basically, the Gemara gave two different examples of where ribbis does not apply to the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, let's quickly summarize what we saw this morning. Okay, the Gemara discussed first this idea that when the Torah uses the word Yad, generally speaking, it's taken literally. The word Yad means something that's handed over, meaning movable items. And that's how we know the pasuk says, by Ona v'chisimkru memkar lamisecha o kano miyad amitecha, that the rules of Ona only apply to movable items, not to property. There's one time in Chumash where Yad means possession, but the Gemara says that's just simply an exception to the rule. We also learned this morning that anything that is, anytime there's a discrepancy in terms of quantifiable material, meaning how much I actually sold you, not the value of the item, so then there's no Ona whatsoever, and immediately it's the sale is voided. The Gemara entertained the question of, if I take a movable item and put it into the ground, specifically a wheat kernel, which can either be eaten or be used as a seed, and I put it into the ground, is the ground simply viewed as a container, or does it become bottled to the ground? The Gemara asks this question as it relates to the laws of Ona'a, Shvua, and the laws of Chadash, and Teiku, the Gemara left this question unresolved. The next discussion in the Gemara today came to the question of whether or not the laws of Ona, we know the laws of Ona don't apply to Karka and Hekdesh. What about Bitul Mekach? What if you charge over a six? Is there going to be subject to the laws of Bitul Mekach when it comes to Hekdesh and Karka? So by Hekdesh, we basically saw that there were two very divergent opinions. Shmuel's position is that there never has to be any kind of representative value when it comes to deconsecrating Hekdesh. Rav Chisda says just the opposite. There can be no discrepancy when it comes to Hekdesh in terms of its value versus how much you deconsecrated for. That will affect our understanding of the Mishnah Temura. And the Gemara points out that this is a machlokus between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, and the Gemara even entertained, this work got a little bit complicated, switching around the opinions of Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish so that it conforms with what else we know from Rav Yochanan. And then finally, discussion today about the laws of Onan Ribbis not applying to the Beis HaMikdash. So again, the laws of Onan not applying to the Beis HaMikdash, so we're going to interpret that based on whether you hold like Shmuel, whether you hold like Rav Chista. The laws of Ribbis not applying to the Beis HaMikdash, so the Gemara gave two scenarios in which normally what you would for you and I would constitute Ribbis would not constitute Ribbis for the Beis HaMikdash.